This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good morning, and we are done with the wild card round of the NFL, and we are now down to the final eight as we get into the divisional round of the playoffs. So two games yesterday. One was supposed to happen Sunday, but they did shovel out that stadium in Buffalo. Good enough for the Bills to beat the Steelers 31-17. And then last night, the Eagles and the Buccaneers played, and I'll be flat out honest. The Buccaneers were a 9-8 team that won the division. They've been a good story. They've won 5 of 6. But the Eagles, this was the sort of, can you get rid of everything that you've done during the regular season and just get a fresh start? You were 10-1. You lost 5 of 6. This is the playoffs. Everyone's 0-0. And they did not. They did not. The Buccaneers, a 32-9 victory, and they just completely rolled over the Eagles. This was a two-score game at one point that never felt like any point the Eagles were going to get back into it. So we can talk about the winners, and we will, because Buffalo and Tampa Bay deserve a lot of attention as we head into this weekend. But I want to start with the two losers, because the two losing teams that occurred yesterday have a lot to talk about this offseason. We're going to start with the Eagles, who, again, as I mentioned earlier, at one point they were 10-1 this season, and by every metric, every account, every report, never really played that perfect game. So they were 10-1, winning games in which they hadn't really shown you the Eagles yet, right? It was kind of like Tiger Woods winning all those tournaments. It's like, well, I don't even have my A game. And everyone went, what's the A game? So there was this sort of belief that the Eagles would be even better, you know, once everything was really starting to come together. And that wasn't the case. They really started on this downward spiral. And people are using the term exposed when they played San Francisco and then played Dallas. And then they sort of free-falled, you know, after that. And that's a legit statement. I mean, again, you come into a game at 10-1, you're going to host San Francisco, and then you lose 42-19. You follow that up getting bombed at Dallas. You lose to Drew Lock on a last drive of a game in the fourth quarter as the Seahawks win. And then you lose the final two games of the season to Arizona and the Giants, albeit the last game of the season wasn't anything that you needed. And Marcus Mariota is the leading passer. So the Eagles went into that game 11-6. We know, you know, Jonathan Gannon, defensive coordinator, was gone. Shane Steichen, the offensive coordinator, gone. Both of them became head coaches this past season. And you really started to feel it. But where you got the sense that the Eagles never really were figuring themselves out was there was no way they could adjust when teams started blitzing more. You saw it last night over and over again. Right, I mean, it was close to 60% of the time that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers blitzed Jalen Hurts. They can't take advantage of the middle of the field. The defense on the defensive side, no one can tackle. And now the Eagles are going home. And it leads people to a conversation of, well, what does this mean for Nick Sirianni? You know, Jalen Hurts just got a huge contract. So they're going to be centering the offense around that guy for a long time. Now, is Nick Sirianni the right guy? If you're going to start adding some youth to this team, if you're going to start getting maybe shredding some players and shredding some contracts to free up some money, is Nick Sirianni? This isn't a rebuild. This is a reset that the Eagles are going to have to do. They have their quarterback. They have skilled players. They still have a young defensive core, former Georgia Bulldogs. But they are old in certain areas. They are veteran-laden in certain areas. Now, you could see Jeffrey Lurie's face last night towards the end of the game, how bitter he looked about this whole situation. And that may lead people to believe, you saw Howie Roseman putting stuff in his bag, may lead people to think that, all right, Nick Sirianni's done. But again, owners and GMs very, very rarely make angry decisions. Everything needs to be calmed down. You go back to the drawing board because you do need to have internal discussions. What exactly did go wrong? Why did we lose 6 of the final 7 games to be out of the playoffs in the wild card round 11 months after we went to the Super Bowl? Right? Now, in this situation, I would want, if I'm the upper brass of the Eagles, I may look at Nick Sirianni and say, well, when all the circumstances were right, you were a Super Bowl coach. You had the right defensive coordinator, good enough that he got an NFL job. You had the right offensive coordinator, good enough that he got an NFL job. Why didn't this team continue on its level of success finding the right people? That's going to be on Sirianni. When this team got exposed against San Francisco and then against Dallas, where were the adjustments? Where were the ability to sort of come back and go, all right, regroup, reset, let's go to Seattle and win this football game and get back on track? Because it was an absolute free fall from that point of losing to San Francisco. Their only win since November 26th was against the Giants at home. That's it. It went from 10-1 to 11-6 to first round exit of the postseason. That's the evaluation. It's not a punishment to fire Nick Sirianni for going 11-6 and losing 5 of 6 and then losing to the Buccaneers. You're not firing him because you're punishing him for not delivering the team further into the postseason. You would fire him, if indeed they do, because in the face of adversity, he wasn't the guy to get the ship correct. That is, at least to me, the question that has to be answered in the meetings leading up to the decision on whether or not he's going to be the right guy. Right? It's this league, and I cannot stress this enough, this league has always been about what you are going to do and not what you've done. Right? I mean, you can ride what you've done for a little bit, but for the most part, it is what you are going to do tomorrow. Right? We don't give quarterbacks contracts for achieving things. We give them contracts because they need to achieve more. You keep head coaches because it was fun to go to the Super Bowl a year ago, but when that becomes 2 years ago and 3 years ago, you need to find out today if he's the right guy. And that's going to lead me to the Steelers. The Pittsburgh Steelers lost yesterday, and it wasn't a big surprise. They were a 7 seed. They were going on the road to Buffalo. They didn't have TJ Watt. But I've been asked a few times by friends of mine about the Steelers, even my brother who's known me, his whole life. And I always got the same kind of response about the Steelers going to the playoffs. So I'm a fan and then I'm an analyst. So I'm going to go a little fandom here, right? About, well, are you happy they made the playoffs? I mean, are you excited they made the playoffs? Like, kind of in a way of like, why would you be? And I said, look, what do I gain by not making the playoffs? The 15th pick in the draft? The 16th pick in the draft? What's the prize for not going to the playoffs? The prize that I got yesterday was when the Steelers turned a 21-0 deficit into a 24-17 deficit, and they were down one score in a game in which they found a little bit of rhythm and their defense was starting to shut Buffalo down a bit. So there was a little excitement and a little bit of energy and a little bit of, all right, 10 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. This is a one-score game. But of course Buffalo was going to win that game. And they did. Khalil Shakir gets into the end zone, and that's it. Right? The Steelers go for it on fourth down to try to get... that's it. It's over. But after the game, Mike Tomlin was asked about his contract by Brooke Pryor of ESPN, and he didn't even let her finish the question. He just walked off the podium. So the Steelers have had no losing seasons under Tomlin in 17 years. None. But they've lost their last 5 playoff games. You have to go back to a win against Kansas City in the January of 2017 or the 2016 season to find their last victory in the playoffs. It's a dangerous place to be in the middle of the NFL, where you barely get in, not good enough to get a top 5 pick, and not good enough to be on the level to compete for a Super Bowl. And that's where Tomlin's got these Steelers. It's a very dangerous place to be. Look, you want to know the team that is like that over the last 20 years? The San Diego / LA Chargers. This is a team that went 14-2 and lost in the playoffs to the Patriots. This is a team that went 11-5, won the West with 13-3 records, and caught themselves in the middle of a sort of vortex of Tom Brady and other playoff failures. That's where the Steelers are. The Steelers do not have a team that's on Buffalo's level or Kansas City's level or Cincinnati's level when healthy or Baltimore's level to be that way. But they're good enough. They overachieve. Is it possible that the Steelers need a new voice? I go back to what I said yesterday about Greg Olson's comments about Mike McCarthy. It's insane to talk about Mike McCarthy being fired. He'll be gobbled up tomorrow. Yes, so will Mike Tomlin. He may not be the right voice for the Steelers now. It just may need to be a parting of ways. And you know who the best example of that is? Andy Reid and the Philadelphia Eagles. Because about 10 years ago, this is where they thought Andy Reid was with the team. Sort of at a crossroads. Been here a long time. Same old thing. Not really getting out of our own mud. You know what? You might be better off somewhere else. We might be better off with someone else. And that worked out for both. Doug Peterson came in and got the Eagles a Super Bowl, and Andy Reid has had an amazing successful run in Kansas City. That may be what needs to happen for the Steelers. That may need to happen in Philadelphia. So we're going to get to the winners, because Buffalo certainly deserves tremendous accolades for what they did and how they're looking. And Tampa Bay, I don't want to call them a wild card like in this process, because they got to go to Detroit and face the Lions and that noise at Ford Field. But when you are the guy that follows the guy, getting your team to the divisional round is pretty good for Baker Mayfield. We'll talk about the winners, but a little bit more on the two teams that lost coming up.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sportsnet Radio. So again, you know what? And I had to admit this to a friend of mine yesterday. Listen, of course I was rooting for the Steelers. Of course it was, like, painful to watch Khalil Shakir score that touchdown when he was like, trying to slow them down, get the ball back, maybe tie the game. But let's all be honest here. I mean, America wants Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, part three. Right? Like, they don't want a 10-7, don't have TJ Watt, not a great, thrilling offense to be messing up the postseason. We're getting Patrick Mahomes in Buffalo on Sunday. That's how you write it, right? This is part
that's
three.
New.
This is Manning Brady, right? This is the two. This is the third time that they'll meet in the postseason. They have had epic games, right? The AFC Championship game won by Kansas City, the 13-second game in the divisional round won by Kansas City, and now Buffalo gets to host this game coming up in the divisional round. And these two have been sort of around the postseason. Last year was a little disappointing about, again, how the Bills. This is the funny thing. Last year, after the Bills, and we talked about it, about, you know, hey, DeMar Hamlin went down and didn't quite look the same and barely squeaked by Miami. Had a big lead in the game, and then Miami came back. Buffalo won by three. And then they just were completely, completely out of the game against Cincinnati. And I kind of thought, you know, hey, look, the window might be closing a little bit. You know, Brian Daboll leaving might have been, you know, a factor in the team and whatnot. And then they had Ken Dorsey as the offensive coordinator. They fired him. They were 6-6. They were outside the playoffs. It didn't look very good. And all of a sudden, they turned it around. Not only have they turned it around, if Josh Allen doesn't turn the ball over, they're going to win every game they play. They are really hell-bent on playing in the Super Bowl. Last night was Josh Allen. I thought the Steelers could win the game if Josh Allen made mistakes, and he made zero mistakes. He didn't throw a pick. He didn't fumble the football. He ran for 52 yards on a touchdown run because he could.
That run was ridiculous.
It was ridiculous. It's a third down run, mm-hmm. And he's got, you know, he's, and then he fakes it. You know, he's faking out and cutting and doing it, rolling into the end zone.
And then all of a sudden, he got wheels.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was that fast.
You know, he's a big guy, so he's strong, so they don't mind it when they have fourth down and short and they do the tush push and he's in a pile of bodies getting twisted and, you know, turned like hot metal. irrelevant. He bounces right back up again. He threw to three different receivers yesterday. And again, the Bills didn't turn the ball over. When the Bills don't turn the ball over, they're going to win football games. And that's what the, you know, unfortunately for the Steelers, it got down to 21-0. It was 21-0. And I did think the Steelers were going to get boat raised out of that game. But Pittsburgh, to their credit, did come back. You know, and it's, and you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, the interception in the end zone that ended up leading to Josh Allen's 52-yard touchdown run was a critical point in the game because it was 14-0. Could have made it 14-7. Instead, they get the turnover and go back down the other way and score a touchdown. And now you're down three scores. But again, it leads us to a better game. I mean, I wouldn't have apologized to America if the Steelers had won. And you're like, yeah, deal with it. Too bad. But at the same time, you're getting Patrick Mahomes in Buffalo against Josh Allen, third act in the postseason. They met during the regular season, and that really was a win for Buffalo. It sort of sparked the five-game win streak leading into the postseason. And you couldn't ask for a better matchup.
Now, all we got to do now is just hope that the game happens, right?
Right.
Is there another snowstorm coming?
Yeah, exactly.
Bills Mafia and mount up.
It's the first time Patrick Mahomes will be playing a playoff game on the road outside Super Bowls.
What if he loses right away?
Right?
he can't play on the road. All right.
So again, talking about the losing teams, because I think there are some questions about the organization and what they really want to do. Mike Tomlin, I love Mike Tomlin. I'm a Mike Tomlin guy. I know there's people in Pittsburgh who aren't a fan. They don't like the fact that the Steelers are just an also-ran team that barely gets into these postseasons, and when they get there, they don't really do much. I get it. It's a city of champions and all Super Bowl trophies and all that. I get it. But, man, his walking off the podium last night with Brooke Pryor, I understand why he did it. I've followed this guy for 17 years. I understand why he did it. He's no nonsense. He doesn't talk about this kind of stuff. He does not talk about this kind of stuff. He doesn't want to. He does not want even a word. But you could have said next question.
Yeah. Could have pulled a Belichick, right?
You could have just said next question. You could have just said, I'm not asking that. Now, he may have done it because there might be some history. Brooke Pryor is a Steelers reporter. This is not a national guy entering the locker room and talking to Tomlin for the first time this season. She is a Steeler reporter, and they might have had a deal where he's like, Brooke, I'm tired of you asking this. And she's probably asked it a couple of times on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday, whatever, and he's refused to answer it. And maybe he just said, that's enough. It's enough. She keeps trying to get me to make – she's trying to get me a quote to quote on my contract. I'm not quoting my contract. I've done this song and dance before because it's not new news that I'm on my final year of my contract. I got 1 year left. It's not new news, and I've never talked about it, and I don't know why you're not getting the message. I'm not talking about it. But if you don't know that, it looks kind of petty. It looks kind of petty. But I just think, look, I don't want him to answer it. It's okay that he doesn't answer it. His team just lost a playoff game. But, you know, she's asking it because she's asking it. You know, where are you? The Pittsburgh Steelers have never given Mike Tomlin, have never let his contract get to this point. They've always worked it out within about 2 years remaining on the deal. So nobody knows if it's the Steelers, if it's him, if he wants to go somewhere else. And I'll be honest, if I was him, I'd want to go somewhere else. He's got an unappreciative fan base that doesn't understand necessarily how hard it is to get to 10 wins, 9 wins with what they've had. And over the last 5 or 6 years, they've had a beat up, absolutely physically destroyed quarterback and a rookie and a second year guy that got hurt. And that those have been the quarterbacks that have been on the team in the last 5 years. The last time when they went to the playoffs where they lost to Kansas City, Ben Roethlisberger barely could walk. Right. And now they missed it in Pickett's rookie season, and they made it this year needing Mason Rudolph, the third guy on the roster. I'd be like, yeah, maybe I'll go for somewhere else. Can you imagine, though, if you have a coaching world, right? If you are the Atlanta Falcons, Carolina Panthers, if you are the Raiders, Chargers seem to have their guy because a lot of reports are Harbaugh's. The interview went really well. Seattle, right? If you are a team that is looking at your, like, if you're Nick Sirianni, if you're the Eagles and Nick Sirianni, if you're Jerry Jones and you've got looking at Mike McCarthy. And there is a world of Bill Belichick, Mike Vrabel, Pete Carroll, and Mike Tomlin available to be head coaches. Like, wouldn't you be looking at your guy a little differently? You know, and you know what's funny about that? Because with all of the Tennessee Titans, with all of these names popping around, you know who's the leading candidate to be the head coach of the Tennessee Titans? Bobby Slowick, offensive coordinator of the Texans. 36-year-old guy. They still have a presence among these strong coaching candidates that are being available. Tomlin might be in a situation where he's like, yeah, you know, I'm done. I don't want to go 10-7 anymore. I don't want to barely get in. You know, I want to go someplace where I can maybe build something up. He does deal with an organization that's a little stingy when it comes to money. Doesn't always pay the guys you need to pay. They got a lot of money tied up on defense. Not necessarily a ton of money for offense. But the Bills, and let's get to them for a second. I was wrong about the Bills. I didn't have the Bills going to the playoffs this year. Now, a lot of it had to do with the fact that I was in love with Miami, and we all thought Aaron Rodgers and the Jets would actually do something with that roster. So once the Jets went bye-bye, it opened up the door for another team to get into the upper echelon party of the AFC that we thought was pretty loaded. And, you know, when Burrow is out for Cincinnati and Jacksonville is not getting into the playoffs and the Chargers aren't getting into the playoffs, it opens up a possibility for a team like Buffalo to get in. They won 5 straight to win the division. They've earned a 2 seed. The home field advantage in Buffalo is real, but only if the Bills play particularly well. I know that's a weird way to put that because you should play well, but it's not an unbeatable force because the Bills can beat themselves. That's what they did in their loss to Cincinnati. That's almost what they did in a narrow win against Miami. Those were 2 wintry type games. It was actually snowing in their game against Cincinnati. It's when the Bills kind of throw up on themselves a little bit that the home field advantage is nullified. But if they play football the way they played yesterday, Kansas City's going to have a hard time winning that game even with Patrick Mahomes. Because there is an electricity that really goes through that stadium. All right, we'll talk about more about the Buccaneers and what Baker Mayfield has done when we continue. We're wrapping up the wild card weekend in the NFL as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We got Dan Miller coming up, play-by-play voice of the Lions, coming up in 15 minutes. Detroit will be hosting Tampa Bay. Do we feel good for Baker Mayfield that he's kind of back?
You know what? I did last night.
I was too.
I was feeling good for him. I mean, I don't really know too many players on the Buccaneers outside of, you know, Evans and... You know, a few of the stragglers.
Chris Godwin.
Yeah, some of the stragglers that you remember from, you know, the good old Brady days. But I did. I felt really good for Baker. I'm like, okay, it's almost like a rejuvenation for you.
This is a wild. He's got such a wild story. I mean, the number one pick in the draft by Cleveland, and a surprise number one pick at that. He gets them to the postseason. They beat the Steelers. They play pretty good against the Chiefs, but they lose. Then he's got a shoulder injury. He gets jettisoned out there. He goes to Carolina. People like him in Carolina. He's going to win the starting job at Carolina over Sam Darnold, but it doesn't work out. They don't win enough games. He gets cut or released. He ends up going to the Rams in like 5 minutes. He suits up and beats the Raiders in a game. He finishes out his season with the Rams, and then what does he have to do? He has to go to Tampa to compete to be the guy that followed Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
And what does he do? He leads them to a division win and a playoff appearance and a playoff victory.
Yeah.
So good for him.
And now
remember, this guy was in all the ads, progressive ads,
my God,
right?
All
of them. He was becoming a national figure. Like, he was selling his products, and he was in the postseason.
And it all stemmed from that one Monday Night Football game when he made his debut with the Browns. Remember, Tyrod Taylor got hurt. He came in, and then just was electric. And we're like, oh, my God, this is a different Browns team.
He's got a personality.
Mm-hmm.
He won a Heisman Trophy. Like, again, number one pick in the draft. Lincoln Riley, his college coach, was at the game last night.
Oh, sentimental.
Right? All sentimental. And they thumped Philadelphia 32-9.
That was shocking. I mean,
I was too.
I was going back and forth. What was more shocking, that score or Cowboys Packers? And I still lean towards Cowboys Packers.
I still lean towards Cowboys Packers. Because Philadelphia was a struggling football team. There was really no justification to believe the Eagles were going to win that game last night by the only thing you would have is just trusting that they would figure it out in the playoffs.
Yeah,
Dallas was 8-0. They were putting up 37 points a game.
Yeah.
They were the number two seed in the NFC. Like, these were things that they brought to that game against the Packers. There should have been no letdown at all to get bombed out of your own crib.
Nah, see, I figured the Eagles would manhandle the Buccaneers because I was like, all right, you know what? You're in the playoff mode now. Now you're going to find that Super Bowl way that you had last year. And they just never were able to find it.
Yeah.
I mean, even without A.J. Brown, they looked terrible.
They looked terrible. I was more least impressed with the defense. They can't tackle.
Yeah. And you know what?
Cannot tackle.
And they pointed out that they had made that change midseason.
Yeah.
Where they went with, they saw their same defensive coordinator, and then they had Matt Patricia calling defensive plays.
Matt Patricia must have a file of every personnel in the NFL, because I don't know how he keeps getting these gigs.
Yeah. But Matt Patricia wasn't the defensive coordinator. He was just the assistant, but
right.
They gave him play calling duty. And boy, did that back, because he's been play calling since like the midpoint of the season.
Yeah.
Which is, you could almost pinpoint, that's where the Eagles started to decline.
Yep. Yeah, it's falling apart. Yep. And again, they don't have any answers for the blitz. Bowles knew that Jalen Hurts is susceptible to the blitz because they played him 2 years ago, and that's what he dialed up in their win against the Eagles in the playoffs. And then other teams had done it. San Francisco had done it. Dallas had done it. And Bowles, that's what, you know, he orchestrated his defensive units to do. And that's what they did. They got them, again, 60% of the pressures of the defensive plays were blitzes against Jalen Hurts. And again, they couldn't take advantage of the middle, and they couldn't get any separation. They couldn't get personnel around Hurts enough to protect him. And so, again, this was a great victory for Tampa Bay because, again, even if you lose in the divisional round, what a step in the right direction to go from Brady to at least something respectable.
Well, I mean, right? It kind of answers your quarterback question first for the moment, right? I mean, you know, we didn't really think we all looked at Baker Mayfield as the placeholder. You might have something here.
Yeah.
You know, why not just roll with him maybe another season and see if he can duplicate it again?
Yeah. So, again, good win for the Buccaneers.
Real quick, I saw this on Twitter, and I'm kind of fascinated with this idea. It's assuming the Niners win next weekend, which I feel confident that they can do, but I also feel confident the Cowboys would win. But I feel confident that the Niners will win. The NFC Championship game will pit a number one overall pick versus Mr. Irrelevant.
Oh, wow. That's wild. That is great.
Isn't that weird?
That is weird. That's very cool. That's a pretty good
Yeah, I had
to
think about it first. I was like, oh, yeah, Jared Goff was the number one overall pick. I remember Baker.
And if the Niners get to the Super Bowl, that won't be the case.
One
of the four teams that are left. The closest you would get is Houston with the number two pick.
That's right.
Great. Yeah, so,
they're all first-rounders, though. Give them that.
Well, first-rounders. Well, but, you know, listen, let's all be honest here. You're not getting far in the playoffs. Your quarterback mostly is not coming from the third or fourth round if you're at this point.
No.
Yeah, you pretty much are being led by a guy that you took in the first round.
All the quarterbacks left are first rounders except for one.
Except for Brock Purdy. Exactly. that's pretty much the level of success. This is why people talk about what do you want from your team that's sitting around the 500 mark. Do you want to make the playoffs, or do you want to try to get your the next franchise quarterback if you don't really, really have one, or you're not confident enough that you have one? Right? I mean, it's such an important part of the creation of what you're trying to do.
And I don't want to hear that narrative that you can get a franchise quarterback in any round. No, look what we just said. There's eight teams left.
Right.
You know, seven of them are in the first round.
There's
only one outside.
Have there been a number of examples? Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. But, like, for the most part, these, you know, look, for every for everyone that busts from the first round, there's plenty of successes coming from the first round.
And every, you know, we always use that. Everyone uses that entire thing. Tom Brady, 199. Yeah, that's, you know, the only one.
Well, that I'm hoping has died because he's, that's not, no, I've said many, many times.
Now we got
Hold on. What I've said many times is that is not an avenue of success. What you have is you luck out in those situations. Let's go back to Brock Purdy for a second. It's a fun story, but that wasn't the plan of the San Francisco 49ers. That's not that they did not pick Brock Purdy and said, "Wow, we have an amazing superstar with the 256th pick in the draft." That's not how that worked. Through circumstance, he was able to take over the job and become the quarterback. Remember, and I know we all forget, they drafted Trey Young in the first round. That's the guy that was supposed to be doing this. Brady was the same way. When Brady was drafted, they had given Drew Bledsoe a mammoth contract extension. So it's not a plan that you go into the draft war room and figure out quarterbacks in the fifth, sixth round that are going to be your megastars. That's not how it works. It works through circumstances. And I think people have taken that narrative thinking you can get a star in the fifth or sixth round. You can't. You can't. It's really a statistical anomaly that these guys are coming from late rounds and have done really well. But never forget, Brady, in the first few years, was playing on a team with an amazing defense. They didn't want Brady to do a ton. He threw, but they also had a strong running game, good offensive line, and a defense that was keeping games in check. Are we not seeing the exact same thing in San Francisco?
Very true.
Are we not seeing the exact sort of, we're a very, very good team regardless, and yet, and our quarterback, like, give me Brock Purdy on the New Orleans Saints. Like, give me Brock Purdy on the New York Jets without Aaron Rodgers. Let me see that before I think that your game plan was finding diamonds in the rough. Right? They can happen because there's an exception to every single rule. And that's why it drove me crazy when I would hear people talk about a quarterback. Like, they would do it on draft shows all the time. They would remind people about, well, you're talking about a unicorn. Why do we call him that? Because it's rare. In fact, unicorns actually don't exist. So when we use that term, we're actually talking about something that shouldn't be around, shouldn't exist, that you get your quarterback of multiple Super Bowl championships in round six, right? So most of the time, and this is where the Steelers are, because, again, Kenny Pickett doesn't look like it's working out. That's where the Steelers are. It's like, do we want the franchise changed when they went 6-10 and got Ben Roethlisberger with the 10th pick overall, 11th pick overall? Do they need to do that again? Do they need to actually have a season where the ball doesn't bounce their way and they go 6-11 and go, okay, let's take it. There's a future in looking around and saying, okay, try to win, maybe catch a break. But I watched that whole game yesterday, never really believing the Steelers were going to win that game. And I never believed it from going into the game. I thought it was going to be a monumental task for them to pull it off, even with a solid play from Mason Rudolph. Dan Miller is going to join us next to talk about a team that is playing well, the Detroit Lions, next.
This is Brett Musburger, and you are listening live to Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio with my main man, Tony D.
All right, head over to the Progressive guest line, Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $750 on average. Again, emotional night on Sunday as the Detroit Lions beat the Rams to win their first playoff game at home in over 30 years. Dan Miller is the Lions play-by-play announcer, joins us on our Progressive guest line. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Can you before we get into the nitty-gritty details, can you just give us a personal account of what that atmosphere was like? For those of us not living in Detroit, I could feel it through my television.
Yeah, it was 30 years of pent-up emotion for these fans. That had been how long it was since they'd had a home playoff game. And in that time, look, there's been a ton of gut punches, a ton of times where they wanted to believe in the current regime that they had, and it turned out to be bad, and just a fan base that has been through a lot. And to finally win a division, get a home playoff game, have that home playoff game be a night game, just gave everybody time, on Sunday to get lubed up and ready to go. But, man, this was years and years in the making. And Dan Campbell said it yesterday. It started an hour before the game when they were chanting Jared Goff's name, and it ran right through the entire game. And you could see that crowd noise impacting the Rams, forced them to use two timeouts in the second half that cost them late. And that crowd was a factor, but it was an incredible scene.
Let's go back a couple of years. They've gone through a number of coaches, but when they were going to get rid and trade Matt Stafford, they were going to need a guy at the helm, and it's Dan Campbell, and it's an unproven guy, but a guy that was known. What did they expect from Dan Campbell? What did they like about Dan Campbell at that particular time of where the organization was?
I think they were looking for people. They did a reset after they got rid of Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn, where the owner, Sheila Hamp, did a deep dive into the organization to try to find out what was going on. And I know she found that the organization was fractured. It was broken. There were a lot of people that didn't feel valued there. They'd been left behind. The previous regime had basically divided the building in half, and if you weren't involved with football, in their mind, you didn't really matter. And I think she needed to bring everybody together and have a collaborative atmosphere where everybody felt like when they came to work, they were part of the process, whether they sold tickets, whether they were in advertising or in media relations or whatever it was. And she wanted people that believed that as well. So she set the culture and the course and the vision before she hired anybody. And then she hired Brad Holmes and hired Dan Campbell, and those guys have lived that vision every day, and they are people that have made other people in the organization understand that they're important, they're valued. He's rock solid, never changes. He is exactly who you see. He'll tell you where you stand. There's just no reason not to trust him, and for players, that's everything. They trust him. They want to play for him. They don't want to let him down. And he's just been the perfect guy for this organization.
And you brought up Brad Holmes because the trade for Matt Stafford, as they put out on the graphic, has led to the assets and the picks that turned into some solid players for the Lions. From Brad Holmes' perspective, kind of orchestrating that, it's one thing to get picks. It's another to evaluate and use them in the right way. Talk about that process to lead to what we've got now on the field for Detroit.
Well, he walked in the door and his franchise quarterback said he wanted to leave. So that's not an easy way to start a job. And look,
right,
everybody in Detroit understood when Matthew did that. There was no anger. He'd been here 12 years. He'd done everything he could. He'd given everything he had. And it was time for him to move on and have a different challenge. And Brad Holmes needed to find the best deal. So not only did he get draft picks, which he has utilized them, but also traded them and spun them into other draft picks, which allowed them to grow that haul. And it got him a quarterback. And remember, Brad Holmes came from the Rams. Brad Holmes was the one who was pounding the table to draft Jared Goff with the Rams. So when a lot of people thought that the Lions were getting Jared Goff as a bridge quarterback or as a throwaway in the deal to take another draft pick, Brad Holmes thought that Jared Goff could be his starting quarterback here in Detroit, which he needed one. And he's turned out to be right. And Brad Holmes and Ray Agnew, who's the second in charge, also from the Rams, had this vision for Jared from the beginning. And it was really difficult at the beginning because they didn't have much talent. They'd broken this team down, but Jared endured that. Now he's come out the other side and led a top 10 scoring offense 2 years in a row. And, you know, I think it's, again, that trade, as you alluded to, has provided them with a whole bunch of contributors that have set them on this course. And look, it's one of those rare trades that worked out for both sides. Rams got their Super Bowl. Lions got their franchise back moving in the right direction. We'll see where it ultimately ends up. But I think both sides would tell you, based on the circumstances they were in, they feel very good about what they did in that deal.
This league can break a lot of young people where you don't catch a break, and next thing you know, you're out, and next thing you know, you're on the outside looking in. For Jared Goff to get a second chance, about his personality that allowed him to take advantage of that, but also what did the Lions provide him to sort of say, we do believe in you, and there is a second act to Jared Goff. You are not going to be the guy that was in a Super Bowl team that was let go, that was discarded. You do have a second act in this league.
Yeah, there's a lot there. We can do a long show on that. But I will tell you, I'll just relate a conversation that we had with Jared during our training camp special this year. And one of the guys that I work with asked Jared, what have you learned about yourself since you arrived in Detroit? And he said, we could sit here and talk for a long time about that. He said, but I'll give you two things. One, sometimes the thing you think is the worst in the world is the best thing in the world. And number two, I'm a lot stronger than I thought I was. And he had to be to get through those early days when the Lions weren't winning a game, not winning a few games, not winning a game for the first, 8-10 weeks of that season. And then I just think this organization has told him from the beginning, you're our guy. Whatever anybody says on the outside doesn't matter. You're our guy. And then they went about building him an offense. And this team is built around its offensive line. It is the face of the team. That offensive line makes this team go. And they've put a lot of assets into that line, including three number one draft picks, tackle, center, tackle. And I think Jared has just felt loved, embraced, and just empowered by this organization to make this thing work. And they've lived it, and he's done it. And we've done things on offense that we haven't done since Barry was here.
Yeah.
And having a running game and having balance and being a team that consistently scores points. As I said, last 2 years, top 10 scoring. And then, look, we haven't won a division in 30 years. And it's nothing against Matthew Stafford, but we didn't win a division when Matthew was here. We didn't win a playoff game when Matthew was here. So Jared Goff deserves a lot of credit, man. And that win on Sunday night was a big moment for him. And I honestly believe there was some closure in that moment where he can now put that trade behind him, because that's hard, man. When you get basically discarded, that team goes on and wins a Super Bowl, and you're over in Detroit trying to figure things out. Well, they have figured things out, and they just knocked his old team out of the playoffs. That's not to say that's the same as winning a Super Bowl, but for him, if you lose that game to the Rams, and they knock you down again, it's a hard thing to live with, man.
Sure.
But I think, honestly, he woke up Monday, and I'm just, this is me talking, not him. Woke up Monday feeling much more at peace about that whole process and living with that. He just moves forward now. Now it's about him and the Detroit Lions, and he can put that Rams thing behind him.
Great story. Dan, great stuff. Thank you so much for giving us your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Dan Miller, the play-by-play voice of the Lions. And again, you could feel it. And again, I've said many times, I don't try to get caught up in these emotional moments. I don't try to get suckered in to these things. Sports is a cruel place sometimes, but it's also a place of real joy and real emotion. And when you feel it as a fan, you don't necessarily have to be a fan to feel some of the moments that come through. When a team that has been around your whole life, that has never done anything my whole life, and all of a sudden they win this massive playoff game. And the story, again, of Jared Goff sort of coming back and getting this win. And he's right. I can't imagine. Like, think about that Super Bowl. Think about that Super Bowl night, about the Rams beating the Bengals. And if you're a Bengals fan, yeah, you're like, oh, man, we came so close to winning the Super Bowl. And if you're a Rams fan, you're elated, right? Especially if you've lived in Los Angeles your whole life and you're like 50 and you've seen the team leave to go to St. Louis, you know, and you missed the days of Vince Ferragano and Jack Youngblood and all, and then they came back and they won this Super Bowl. But you think about what Jared Goff must have been feeling. And look, we're all human beings. We're not robots. And he must have saw that and went, here I am, a young man. I was the number one pick. I went to a Super Bowl. But then this organization told me no, I was not going to be their guy going forward. And then they got a guy, and he just won a Super Bowl, and I can't figure out how to win games here with an organization that doesn't win at all. It must have been a hard place to be. It must have been a really difficult place to be that February a couple of years ago. But look where he is now. Great story.